Sports Professor Ricardo, Beyond the Scoreboard, trillion-dollar business of sports. Only time in the calendar year, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if you don't count the All-Star game, as times where the Big Four don't have official games or competition. Don't be misled. Economic impact of the All-Star game, significant in Miami and LA, getting its economic impact for the Olympics, and on and on and on. So it is a big time. If you want to see the entire list of all 15 topics, CSNNA.com, same in Chicago. Look at the website as far as CSN Chicago is concerned. And if you want, subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, as like. A lot of issues this week. We also have a surprise and interesting guest, Marcus Lattimore, former NFL running back. We'll tell you about him a little later to whet your appetite for the football season. But let's talk about some of the big issues this week. The first one deals with the end of Wimbledon. The fortnight wraps up, but Wimbledon considering fining its players for seeing an alarming number of retirements, first round of this year's tournament. The retirees speculated to have been injured coming into their first round matches, but stuck it out to be guaranteed roughly $45,000 in prize money. And Wimbledon is now considering implementing a new rule to deter injured players from stepping onto the court in the first place. On the ATP level, if you can't play, you still get your prize money twice in the year, said Federer. Maybe the Grand Slam should adopt some of that, then maybe we should eliminate half the players who turn up injured. My take is this. If anybody can make this happen, it's Roger Federer, a global leader who always considers the little guy, despite his record 18 Grand Slams. Well, that's tennis, and everybody's excited about it, as we'll be able to see. But we've come off of a very interesting All-Star festivity in South Florida, my home, where I was instrumental or at least helpful in fanning the flames to get baseball originally. And if you remember, the Marlins, 93, and then years after that, four to be exact, they win the championship, and then five more after that. Fire sale happened. The bottom line is $80 million of economic impact. The Fan Fest at the Miami Beach Convention Center. You drive by, you see some really significant pride, the celebrity softball game, the futures game, a kick butt home run derby contest, and obviously Miami came for the All-Star game and conquered. The last game in San Diego, 31% drop over tickets, and this year, 885, 62% drop from the Citi Field deal. And my take is, let's not be misled by the ticket sales. Miami, well-versed in mega events and the city's Marlins, thorough planning on security, traffic flow, parking, and crowd-pleasing entertainment reflects just that. Good for Miami. Long time waiting. They were promised it in 1995. Bud Selig awarded the 2000 All-Star Game to South Florida that year. But in 98, the year after the Marlins won their first World Series, the league changed course and awarded the game to the Braves' Turner Field, saying that South Florida needed a new stadium in order to host the events. The Marlins could have hosted last year's All-Star Game, but it went instead to San Diego's Petco Park. David Sampson, the president of the Marlins, said he switched with San Diego due to booking issues, and they certainly thought it paid off. Now the big wait with L.A. 2024, the Olympic opportunity there. Clearly, events, talking about how important it is for economic impact to generate some excitement, some community pride, and the like. We'll have to see if it's awarded for the 2024 Paris, 2028 L.A., or vice versa. Bottom line is, they will take either one of these and do it very successfully. But let's not forget how important South Florida was in generating a exciting All-Star game as they move forward. A lot of baseball issues, though. Let's wrap up one as far as the courts are concerned. Umpire Angel Hernandez sued the league, claiming racial discrimination. Joe Torre, he said, had an history of animosity toward Hernandez, stemming from Torre's time as manager with the Yankees. Hernandez cites the fact that he'd not been assigned to many World Series games, coupled with the fact that he hadn't been promoted to crew chief. The ump was born in Cuba, now lives in Florida, and specifically, the lawsuit alleges violations of the Civil Rights Act of 64 and Ohio state laws. MLB not issued a comment thus far, and skeptics surrounding the issue are noting Hernandez seems to be doing something or seeing something nobody else does in his claims against Torrey. And my take is this, with the possible exception of Derek Jeter and Big Papi, perhaps no one in present-day baseball is revered more than Torrey. Expect extra scrutiny as the courts take up this matter. Well, let's stay international. Remember, we talked about how important the Olympic piece was, but how about the public support? LA, according to a new IOC-funded research project shared by Sports Business Journal, the LA 2024 bid has more public support than Paris's. The report noted 78% of LA residents said they support the effort to host the Games. Only 8% opposed. On the other hand, Paris support from only 63%, 23% opposing the bid. The surveys further explain the dwindling number of major Western cities willing to host the country, be the host country of costly games. Paris's higher opposition could be problematic for the IOC, which has seen numerous American and European bids die in the face of local political objections and is keen to put the politics out of this equation. My take is this. In light of the limited interest among qualified hosts and the ever-escalating cost, this coming week's verification that both 2024 and 2028 games would be awarded in September, looking like a solid win for the IOC, regardless of which city comes first, doesn't really matter. Whoever gets 2028, a little longer to plan, but then again, certainty, more important than immediacy, to that bid. Both cities would win if that happens. Let's shift over to the other side of the pond for golf. The 2017 Open Championship will award the prize fund in U.S. dollars in recognition for the fact it's the most widely adopted currency for prize money. Brexit considered to have played a big role in this decision, with the ensuing weakening of the British pound. Many players not happy with this shift because being paid in pounds as opposed to dollars typically means more prize money due to the exchange rate. 2007, for example, the exchange rate tipped over 2 British pounds per $1. Winning the British Open was the most lucrative prize of the four majors. This year, the exchange rate stands at 1.2 to 1. The British Open winner received less than any other major winner in 16, and this year appears to follow the same narrative. My take is, whether counted in dollars or pounds, this year winner stands to receive a record $1.8 million, hardly pocket change in any context. Stay with golf. European Tour and select American events look at format changes geared to attracting younger fans and millennials. And with 16 years of consecutive growth, global value commerce is benefiting from double-digit sales increases year over year, 15%, totaling nearly 60 million in transactions yearly. Many golf retailers losing money or going out of business altogether. TaylorMade, Golfsmith, and Nike, GlobalGolf.com thriving as a secondary market expert providing name brand equipment, Callaway, Cobra, Titleist, for example. And the take is, especially for you golfers, since the 2009 market crash, consumers' deal mentalities have allowed companies like Nordstrom Rack, Aldi, Off Fifth, which is Saks, to develop and enjoy substantial growth, just like GlobalGolf.com has done in the golf space. Let's look at the NBA for a couple of minutes. There are some interesting pieces of this. The first one, jersey patches. It's a new extension of an older story. The Raptors. The Toronto-based company Sun Life will have a patch as the anchor of the CSR program promoting diabetes awareness and prevention. Financials reported valued at about Canadian $5 million annually, right on par with many of the other NBA jersey patch deals. Rights with group benefits, life insurance and retirement planning, portions of the insurance financial services category as well. And Sun Life, by the way, an official sponsor of the Raptors, for 4 years now, the deal escalates the company's involvement with the team. The bottom line is another example, Sun Life taking the next step, StubHub pioneering the way, day one with the Sixers. Staying with the NBA and its new arena, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talks about the Panorama Club as a key feature of the new arena in Milwaukee. Fans will get a catwalk high view of the entire court from the club, presenting the team with yet another sponsorship or naming rights opportunity, maybe even a bidding war. Bucks president Peter Fagan said several million dollars over a 7 to 10 year term was likely for what he called a branding opportunity. The name the club holds right now is a placeholder. 500 to 600 people will allow the fans then, because of the situation and where they view, they can look out to the merchandise and entertainment district and look in to the arena. Just look at the new kind of deal, I would say, as new sponsor density. The Bucks aren't only building out, they're building up. Well, just a couple more issues that we can deal with and clean it up before we get to Marcus Lattimore. First, NASCAR and a nagging issue regarding sponsorships. The current NASCAR deal with Fanatics, teams get only 9% of sponsorship revenue, a third to the team, a third to the driver, a third to the sponsor. And it contributes greatly to the small amount of total merchandise-related income drivers see at the end of the day. The 10-year deal with Fanatics takes 75% of the revenue, admittedly lopsided, but when NASCAR's merchandising boom was at its peak more than a decade ago, a top star's revenue about $3 to $4 million. But now the merchandise income is not commensurate with the biggest stars in even dirt track racing. And most of the sport's biggest stars are struggling to pull in $1 million of merchandise right now. Obviously, the take is, need more money, need more merchandise. NASCAR needs to appeal to the drivers for obvious reasons. And then finally, let's end with college football. Horns up, limes in. That's the new campaign being rolled out by Corona Extra to celebrate being named the official sponsor of the Texas Longhorns. Campaign will be visible around DKR Stadium at home football games during the season. The move for Corona marks yet another massive step toward marketing the beer to American sports. 5-year deal. The university is a brand partner in the U.S., expanding on Corona's long-standing ties in soccer and boxing. The company making a push into collegiate football by partnering with one of the country's leading programs. Really isn't anything more emblematic of the state of Texas than the storied history of the 4-time football national champion Longhorns. John Alvarado, VP of Marketing for Corona Extra, obviously says, tellingly, I would say, according to multiple sources, in-stadium alcohol sales earned the university $1.8 million in 2006. No surprise, they're partnering with a growing beer brand. Well, that leads us to something in football, and it's not just on the field. It is a very interesting perspective. Marcus Lattimore, born in Duncan, South Carolina, he attended James F. Burns High School in Duncan, and he played football for the Burns Rebels. One of the most decorated players in South Carolina high school football history, Lattimore named ESPN's National High School Junior Football Player of the Year in 2008. In his senior year, he was named South Carolina's Mr. Football and played in the 2010 U.S. Army All-American Bowl. He played college football at the University of South Carolina, drafted by the Niners in the fourth round of the 2013 NFL Draft. Here's the deal. He was injured catastrophically, you may remember, his senior year. He retired from football at the age of 23. In mid-December of 15, he announced he would join the staff of newly appointed South Carolina coach Will Muschamp. In April, the NCAA indicated the university would gain an unfair recruiting advantage by hiring Lattimore due to his work in high school kids' areas through recreation. And in May 16, it was announced that Lattimore would be joining the football staff at Heathwood Hall Episcopal School in Columbia. He was named head football coach there last November. A very interesting story to tell about injury protection of college football seniors, how you deal with insurance, how you persevere, and rules with the NCAA. Words to live by as training camps open in the NFL. Marcus Lattimore. Rick Caro here at the Sloan MIT Conference, and this is normally reserved, and I mean this respectfully, I really do, as a sports lawyer, does a Harvard thing. This is usually the two-day geek fest. Today, it might be, but that's not what you're going to hear for the next 15 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. I will tell you that this is all about business, and it's all about how you deal with business issues. And one of the fundamental things about it is how you protect
the important component. We're all here and everybody's talking about getting a job or doing a job, but people wouldn't be here but for the first-class athletes who perform at a level beyond anybody else. Marcus Lattimore, how are you, man?
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me,
sir.
Have you. And the other thing about this, which is important, is I don't know if we can see it, but this is Marcus Lattimore's picture. He was drafted in the fourth round by the Niners. We'll go through that story. Look at him today. Look at this. That's a businessman. That is a businessman. I don't know about that. I don't know about that picture. That's a football drafted, ready to go picture. You're
smiling. That's a guy who his whole life he wanted to be in the NFL. And he had to put on this certain persona.
Yeah.
All right, that this is how you look in the NFL. And that guy, he's long gone.
He's long gone.
He's long gone.
You can tell he's long gone. Because that guy and the splendor of that guy, that's two different things, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
It looks like Gamecock. He is a Gamecock. So, Burns High, Duncan, South Carolina. Obviously, the best football player at the time coming out of South Carolina, ESPN's National High School Football Player of the Year. You've seen these stats for so long, 2008, ready to be drafted in the first round. Why don't you tell the story? Then what happened?
Yeah. So my whole life, you know, I worked for that moment. My junior year, I have an opportunity to go play for the University of South Carolina. My last year, I know it's my last year. And I'm destined for greatness. You know, I have a lot of great people in my circle.
And that's not arrogant. That's confidence.
That's just confidence.
Yeah.
And that's just everything that I put into it because I knew I worked hard and I was able to come back from that first knee injury. And then the ninth game of the year rolls around, October 27, 2012. We're playing Tennessee, one of our rivals in the SEC, and I dislocate my right knee, tear every ligament, my calf muscle, my hamstring. I have nerve damage. I'm rushed to the hospital because there's a possibility I might lose my leg. Now, at that point in my life, football was irrelevant.
Yeah.
I just wanted to walk again. I just wanted to run again. And those were the thoughts that went through my mind. And when you go through adversity like that, when you go through an injury like that, it changes your perspective on the way you see things, on the
way
you see life.
How quickly did it change your perspective? You're sitting there on the field, you're going to the hospital, and obviously you think about your own self-preservation. When does the reality of earning power, family money, building houses, issues about that, when does that all kick in?
When I couldn't feel my leg. I couldn't feel my leg from the knee down, and I'm you know, rushing to get to the hospital that's about 5 miles away, and my family's a little distraught, and the coaches are distraught, and my teammates come visit me after the game. Luckily, we still win the game. My teammates come visit me after the game, and I'm, you know, pretty much just sitting in there, and I'm going to have a blank stare on my face because I really didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just wanted to walk again. That's all I could ever think about. And in that moment, football, like I said, it was irrelevant. And the only way I was able to get through that was because of my faith and also because of the people who invested in me a long time ago and the people who mean so much to me, who didn't want to see me give up. Those kids who are looking at me in South Carolina, they didn't want to see me give up. So I gave it one more shot.
Well, but also, you left out a piece, which is you're bright, intelligent, entrepreneurial, very self-confident. I don't know if you were always that way, but you had the assets to persevere.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's because of, for one, my education.
Yeah.
And for two, you know, a lot of guys from small rural towns, like I'm from, they don't receive the financial literacy.
Yeah.
They don't receive the certain type of etiquettes that I received because I had people in my life who were in good positions. Some guys who worked in corporate America that I looked up to, and I was able to shadow them, and I was able to see how you conduct yourself on a day-to-day basis and how you make it in this world. And I knew if football didn't work out, I'd still have an opportunity to be successful.
All right, no more pity. Let's talk about the transition, okay? So, fourth round, Niners. How long did you play?
I played 2 years.
All right. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Now we talk about the transition. So, how did you then take the next step of giving back life after football, monetizing, creating a stable economic environment right. for your family. That's what this is all about.
Absolutely. And I was able to do that.
Yeah.
Financially, I was in a good place because I received a signing bonus from the NFL, from the 49ers. I received 2 years' worth of salary. So when I walked away from the game, I was in a good position, but I knew I had to go back and get my degree. And I got my degree in public health. And during that transition, I really, I guess, seen how many people gravitated towards me and how many people were inspired by my story.
Interesting.
And because they were inspired by my story, I received a lot of speaking inquiries. So I decided to start a business. And that business is speaking engagements, it's appearances, it's football camps, it's everything that I do, but it's also making a difference in kids' lives.
But there's also a survivalist message to it. I mean, you've got a curriculum that is a special curriculum, but it's based on the personal history and the success and overcoming of Marcus Lattimore.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, the biggest thing that I want these kids to realize is that it may not happen for you. If it doesn't happen, you have a plan B. Speaking of the NFL, speaking of the NBA, MLB, whatever you want to pursue in your life, you can do that. And football is that engine. That sport provides the hope, but the education secures that hope. And my foundation, we educate student athletes for life after sports. And that's what it's all about. At best, you'll play the game till you're 30 years old. You have 50 more years to live. What are you going to do?
Yeah. And that percentage that plays the game till they're 30 years old is microscopic.
Very
what do
small.
You do if you have a magic wand to change the economic system? The insurance issues, the transition issues, the education issues.
Right.
And the NFL has certain ways to do things and certain ways they don't. So how do we change the system?
That's a complicated question,
yeah, it
but it's a great question.
And we have some time.
And it's something, it's an issue that everybody needs to be aware of. And, you know, when it comes to a guy, for instance, we just have to educate them on every single aspect of it. I mean, when there's a high-profile athlete who's coming out of college and he's presented with an insurance form.
Right.
Or something that ensures that he'll be financially secure, make sure he's informed. Make sure he's educated on what he's signing. And right now, that's not the case because guys can't have legal representation.
Right.
And when you look at these, the insurance and the NFL and all the things, the facets that come through it, it boils down to one thing. It's education. It's education.
Yeah.
And the NFLPA, I think, is doing a great job with our rookies who come into the league. I think more colleges are investing a lot more into beyond sports. For example, Oregon State has a program who teaches every single guy that comes on the football team financial literacy and making sure they're prepared. So, I mean, we're going in the right direction, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Why is it a dirty little secret that not too many people talk openly about insurance premiums and boosters or athletic programs actually funding insurance premiums, because it is legal under NCAA rules, and
right.
why not for people who were playing at your college level make everybody aware of what is available and make the risk fall on the people that ought to fall on, not you.
Yeah, it's an issue that a lot of people don't want to talk about because there's money involved. There's finances involved.
Right.
And when we talk about money, that brings up a lot of problems. And, you know, when you look at that scope of the guys who are funding it and the insurance premiums and everything that comes in between that, I believe there should be a mandated protocol
right.
where every single kid who comes into your university or your college they have an opportunity to learn this information and see the resources that they have available. Because there's money involved, because they only want to select those top tier, those few guys, it'll stay a secret until light is brought upon it.
And the secret implies that it's a bad thing. We're all, just to be clear, it's a easy financial transaction that's done all the time. It's just a question of who delivers the money to the athletic department,
right,
who then makes the decisions. Duke, for example, pays for those insurance programs as part of a whole deal during a one-and-done in basketball side. So two-and-done, three-and-done, the key for NFL is you're going to play your senior year. NBA, one and done or not. Obviously, all of those issues have to be collectively bargained with the union, but this whole idea of insurance premiums and assessing the risk certainly could make things a lot easier when somebody makes a decision to go pro or not after 2 years, 3 years in the NBA after 1 year, don't you think?
I mean, absolutely. And I mean, when you're in the NCAA, I mean, the rule right now is you have to stay 3 years.
Yeah.
And just like you said, in the NBA, it's 1 year. But just making these guys aware of what's going on. I mean, just so they know. I mean, half the guys really don't know what's going on.
No, not half, more.
More.
Yeah.
More than half don't know the whole situation. And how we fix that, we have to educate them. Because, as you said, it's not all of this is compliant.
What happened with you? You were going to be an assistant coach in South Carolina, and there were some issues. Tell us about that.
I was. The new head football coach at the University of South Carolina, Will Muschamp, has a program and is dedicated to character development. However, I would be somewhat of an off-the-field coach, life coach.
Right.
And I would be exclusively with the offense. And then Andre Goodman, who's a trusted friend and still is a life skills developer at Carolina, would be with the defense. That didn't work out because of my foundation and some of the things that I do business-wise.
Uh-huh.
Because that they considered it an unfair recruiting advantage if I was to work because of some of the programs that I have in place.
Got it.
Through my foundation.
Got it. Got it.
Do I think that's fair? I guess.
Well, you guess.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, it is what it is, and you're a good businessman. So over time, people will understand what you bring to the table and go the extra mile to protect what you do and where you go to the table, where you come from.
Absolutely.
5 years from now, what's next for Marcus Lattimore?
Great question. I still see myself in athletics. You know, I love the game of football. I love sports in general. Maybe I'll be somewhere in athletic administration. But what I've learned from life, what I've learned about life, is that you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You can plan, you can prepare, you can be organized, and you can hope for the best. And that's what I'll do. I want to continue my career in athletics in some capacity. I love coaching. I love being around kids, and I love educating kids on issues that you bring to life.
Yeah.
So that's the plan. I don't know where they'll take me, but all I know is that whatever happens, I'll be prepared for it because I've seen it all.
Yeah. And I will tell you this, you'd have been a hell of a running back in the pros, but you're even a better human being with more to offer off the field. Thank you, my friends.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Well, Marcus Lattimore sure has some interesting perspective as far as the NFL and college sports are concerned. And again, if you want to see the whole 15 list, we've got CSNNE.com and Chicago CSN as well. Google Play, Audio Boom, Stitcher, subscribe to iTunes feed as well. Join us next week, a substantial British flavor, NFL camps opening soon, and a whole host of other issues as we go beyond the scoreboard.